This Bhagavad Gita also states again and again that the Absolute Truth always possesses inconceivable power. Text 89. I am situated in the material world, and the world rests in me, but at the same time, I am not situated in the material world, nor does it rest on me in truth. Purport. Nothing in existence is possible unless energized by the will of the Lord. The entire manifested creation is therefore resting on the energy of the Lord. One should not therefore presume that the material manifestation is identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A cloud may rest in the sky, but that does not mean that the sky and the cloud are one and the same. Similarly, the qualitative material nature and its products are never identical with the Supreme Lord. The tendency to lord over material nature or Maya cannot be a feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he descends to the material world, he maintains his transcendental nature, unaffected by the material qualities. In both the spiritual and material worlds, he is always the controller of all energies. The uncontaminated spiritual nature always exists in him. The Lord appears and disappears in the material world in different features of his pastimes, yet he is the origin of all cosmic manifestation. Material manifestation cannot exist separate from the Supreme Lord, yet Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in spite of his connection with the material nature, cannot be subordinate to nature's influence. His original form of eternal bliss and knowledge is never subordinate to the three qualities of material nature. This is a specific feature of the Supreme Law's inconceivable potencies. Do you know what the verse we were supposed to read was? Om Agyanantam Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatyade Satarane. Here mentions that the material nature is simultaneously one and yet different from Krishna. That is, the material nature is an expansion of Krishna. Eka desha sutera jagnya joshna vistrasi yata parasya brahmana saktis tetam akilam jagat. Just like the sun may be situated in one place in the universe, and then it's diffusing its heat and light everywhere. But that doesn't mean that because the heat and light are in our room, that the full sun is there. Of course, we can say that the sun is in our room, but if the sun was actually in our room, we'd have a little difficulty being in our room. But we can say, because the sunlight is simultaneously one, and yet it's different. And according to our understanding, not only there's sunlight, but the sunlight is coming from the sun god. But we can't say the sun god is, we can say the sun god is in our room because the sunlight's there. But obviously we're not going to speak to the sun god just because the sunlight is in our room. Similarly, the Supreme Lord's energies are diffused throughout the entire creation. But that doesn't mean that one can necessarily directly contact Krishna just by being in the material energy, for instance. As a matter of fact, the material energy is, Krishna says, Naham Prakasha Sarvasha Yoga Maya Samavrita Mudoyo Nabhijananti Lokoyam Ajam Avyam. That I'm never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent, but them I am covered by my eternal creative potency, Yoga Maya. And so the deluded world knows me not, I'm unborn and inexhaustible. So this material nature specifically is meant to distract us from Krishna by causing us, instead of to hanker for Krishna, to hanker after material assets, and instead of to lament over the fact that we're separated from Krishna, to lament over us being separated from different material elements. Therefore, the material nature is the deluding potency of Krishna to delude the conditioned souls into forgetfulness. But as it says Ye chaiva satika bhava rajasas tamasas chaye patak evati tanvidi na chaham teshu te mai. Ye chaiva satika bhava rajasas tamasas chaye. That these three material natures are modes of nature are deluding us into forgetfulness, but tri bira gunamayar bhavar evik sarvam idam jagat moitam navijananti mame byak param avyam. That Krishna says he's not actually, although he's in the material world, tri bira gunamayar bhavar evik sarvam idam jagat, he's not affected by the material nature. Deluded by the three modes, ignorance, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, who are above the modes and inexhaustible. Know that all states of being, be they of goodness, passion, or ignorance, are manifested by my energy. I am in one sense everything, but I am independent. I am not under the modes of material nature, for they are, on the contrary, are within me. Just like a spider can build a web, and any fly that comes onto the web becomes captured by the web. But the same spider does not become affected by the web. We never find a spider entangled in his own web, although a fly may become entangled. Similarly, Krishna creates the material energy, and he comes here, but he doesn't become entangled when he comes here. He's unaffected by his own energy. So here it says, this is his inconcealable energy, that he, even in the midst of the deluding energy, he can maintain his bliss, knowledge, and eternity. Therefore, Krishna says, Abhijananti mam bhuta manushim tanum ashityam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. That the fools, they deride at my descending in this human-like form. They don't know my spiritual nature and my supreme dominion over all the big. So Krishna's energies for the materialists are inconceivable. How is it that this person who's appearing in a form of a cowherd boy and simultaneously control the every atom in the universe and at the same time be situated in one place where he's localized? So of course, because we can't do this, therefore, we assume no one else can do it. This is generally the conditioned soul. He only accepts what's within his realm of experience. And even if someone directly, even if he directly perceives something, if it's not, he doesn't consider it's possible to do it, then he claims it doesn't exist. Even ordinary people who can do magic, sometimes if one wants to disbelieve in what they're doing, then it's almost like they didn't do it. For instance, there was one famous mystic in England, and he could walk in the air, and he called all the biggest scientists in Europe and England to a hotel room, including Mr. Russell, co-founder of Darwinian evolutionary theory. And all these biggest scientists in Europe watched as he simply walked out the hotel window and into the air. And they all reported what they had seen, that it wasn't a hoax, that they had direct experience of it. But the scientists in America refused to believe. They thought all these scientists are all deluded, because it wasn't within their realm of understanding, and therefore, as far as they were concerned, it didn't exist. It's called selective evidence. Just like in Sridhar Karmaprabhu's book, he mentions how in the 1800s, during the gold rush, they went into the mines and they dug up, tried to get for gold, especially in California. And they found all the different remnants And some of them were skeletons of millions of years old. But they were of civilizations. They were, although it was evidence of civilizations millions of years ago. And it was reported in scientific journals and in newspapers. But that evidence is not considered to be valid because it doesn't go along with the present scientific understanding of how, so what is the antiquity of human species, civilized human species. So they find something which doesn't go along with their preconceived ideas of how things should be, then they reject them. And if someone insists that and presenting that evidence, then they usually just ignore the person, or they fire them, or they can't get a job anywhere. So it's not that scientific evidence or scientists view evidence objectively, but they view it subjectively according to their preconceived ideas of how things should be. Until the evidence becomes so overwhelming, then that becomes the new dogma, and any other evidence that's brought forward after that is rejected. Similarly, Krishna is so great, he's so inconceivable, that people don't want to accept that there could be a person controlling every atom, because it's just beyond our realm of even conception, but to speak of perception. And how could anyone do that and not be completely confused all the time? How could anyone control the biggest thing called the universe and the smallest thing called the atom, and at the same time appear before Mother Jasoda and be bound by a rope and start crying? So this is not within our any realm of experience, but to speak of even conceiving about what this is all about. But without accepting that God has inconceivable potencies, Achinte Shakti, then how is he God? God is just a little bit better than we are. Then what is the question of his being the supreme? God has to have all the potencies that are within our experience. And he has to have potencies completely beyond our comprehension. Otherwise, how is he God? If he's, we can just put him into a little box and examine him. But of course, the whole material universe is created for those people who are trying to avoid God. So it wouldn't be surprising that people want to reject him, especially if he does anything too wonderful. He lifts up Govardhan Hill with his little pinky and holds it there for 7 days and nights, pinky of his left hand, and people say it's mythology because it doesn't come within their realm of experience. Of course, the fact that God is moving on limited planets in their orbit every day and night since time immemorial, which means that lifting a little hill is not a big deal for him. But still, they reject either he can lift a hill or that there's a person behind all these planets moving their orbits. And when they ask for an explanation, their explanation is all by accident. Of course, if everything's by an accident, if they really believe it, then why do they go to school to become a teacher or a PhD? If everything's just by accident, including all the planets in this universe are all just accidents, why don't they just stay at home and by accident they'll get a PhD degree? If everything's by accident, well, why don't they just stay at home and by accident they'll become rich? Why should they bother working for it? If everything else in the universe is going on by accident, why don't they become rich by accident? Why do they have to make so many plans to become rich? So in one sense, they say everything is by accident, but in their practical dealings, they have to make so many plans with their intelligence to accomplish what they want to accomplish. Therefore, there is a type of hypocrisy in modern science, where they claim one thing, but in their practical lives, they're doing something completely different. Anyhow, we'll stop there. Any questions?
The question of carbon dating. I've always wondered, you know, what the stance is on that.
Oh, I don't know anything about carbon dating. It's obviously just partially, I mean, how can they know if something is really 10 million years old? I mean, who can prove it was 10 million years old by the carbon dating or it was 10 years old? How do we know how scientific it really is? Because science is supposed to be by experience, but how do we know what kind of experience they really have? And most of them haven't been around for 10 million years. Anything else? So we'll have fairly short. Well, maybe we'll read one more verse here. Find one. O Arjuna, you should know that this is my inconceivable opulence. This is the meaning propagated by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. That Mahapurusha Karnadaka Shai Vishnu is known as the plenary part of him who is Nityananda Balaram, the favorite associate of Lord Chaitanya. Thus I've explained in the ninth verse, and now I shall explain the tenth. Please listen with attention. So this is a chapter dealing with Lord Nityananda Ram, who's the source of all the different incarnations. That Krishna can expand himself, just like you take a lamp, and with that lamp, or the candle, you light another candle. So one candle is burning, and the other candles burn equally. But there's the original candle, and there's all the other candles which are the same, or burning the same way. But still we say there's an original candle. So that original candle is Lord Nityananda Ram, the source of all the incarnations of Krishna. This particular chapter is glorifying Lord Nityananda Ram, who is the personal associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his pastimes, especially in Kali Yuga here. So we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantaraj, Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande, Hari Bol.